Hello, it's Carnival of Randomness, more or less, because my allergies are starting to hit, and as I was just saying to our guest, that back in the 80s in high school, I would have to go to the bathroom a lot because I had a bloody nose in spring, and they thought it was the 80s, they thought I was doing coke. So we have our intrepid Greg after herding cats.
Hi. Yes, I herded my cats back in the house today. I heard that they fend off other cats in the neighborhood because I got a bunch of ferals next door now. I got a neighbor that this cat had a litter. And they're like, and so they started feeding them. Hello, don't feed cats, because then they don't leave.
A little too much information there, but okay. Now, you know, there's a big event later today, the eclipse. Or is it an eclipse, though? Think about this. Suppose one of the astronauts took a moon pie with them when they went to the moon and floated off. It got bombarded by cosmic rays and became a giant moon pie. It's sentient now. Now it's returning. It's going to block the sun out unless we give it all our RC Cola. So if the world ends, what would you rather do? Obviously, listen to this show. So cool. And we're very glad to have our guest. I told Greg.
Did you call for the ambulance yet, or should I?
I told Greg, we were on a radio show with John Adams. You know, that man who corrupted me and took me from being a pious young lad drinking mineral water to drinking Guinness. Now I look like Sam Kinison met Elvis, Lou Costello. Well, I saw we had a guest here, yes. And I go, hey, this guy is good. Start sending the cookies out to the studio. And he's following. Guess what? I get here. 5 minutes later, there's the cookie trail. And we're very glad to have Dan Zay on here.
Well, thank you, guys.
Were you sticking them in your pocket, or did you get lost?
Somehow, and there was even a dude getting towed there, but somehow I kept with the crumbs, and I got here. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, you missed the action there. They were towing a car on one of the streets.
Where? Where?
Just right over here. I'm not
going
to mention
the
street.
Oh, really? Like bad parking?
One of the streets that gets you in
here. I think somebody's broke down or whatever. But one thing I want to start off with a little is, you know, let's go back sort of to the 80s and a little further back for Greg. About what influenced you when you started playing in a band, and think of like the scene and the music those days. What finally got you to say, wow, I'm going to try to pick up a guitar?
You know, the very first time that I remember thinking, I can do this, I had to be like 10 years old, and I was watching Solid Gold. So this had to be like 1980.
I remember the first episode. Remember the first, because it was a special. And I remember the one guy singing, was it Al Stewart? No. Somebody singing Gold, the song. And
California.
I think the top song was If You Think I'm Sexy by Rod Stewart.
Yes, I remember. It was a must-watch once a week, giving you the top 10 songs of that week. And, you know, two or three of the songs, they would do like a fake performance or something. And I remember, I think it was the Rolling Stones' Start Me Up. And I remember somebody was out there faking. And I'm like, I can do that, right?
They weren't wearing sailor suits, right?
That was only rock and roll. Oh, yeah. But I can think of that video because you could see, I think, Charlie and Bill chuckle, because there's one part where Mick just misses the lip sync. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like he goes, never start. He's like some of these musicians now when the tape doesn't work. He turns around and his voice is still going.
Yes. So that was probably my earliest inclination that I think I could do it, although it would be years before I could. I convinced my mom to buy me a Sears acoustic guitar, and I don't think I could get through Three Blind Mice before I quit lessons and then put it in the closet. Yeah, something like that.
I think we go on our own paths, too, for learning this stuff, and I think one of the things we talked about a lot before was, like, the passion for it, and that at the beginning, and it's like, I've always said, we have to put up anything you want to do in life, how much negative can you take? And what I mean by negative is if you want to do something, you have to work hard. You have to play. Like, say you want to actually be like a bodybuilder. You have to diet, do all that exercise and stuff. Then you can look like me.
Well, you know, I think that's with drums especially, because you're a kid, you're excited, you're like, come on, I want to rock. And then they give you this stupid pad. So, and you're banging on a pad for a year, or as fast as you can, you know, excel to get past that. But, I mean, you know, you have to be able to understand that that's where you start.
Right.
Because you got to train your hands first, and then, you know, hopefully the mind will follow.
And I think the thing, like, John, like stealing from John a lot, though, but he said he was there. and he was saying that, like, when you first played, then he saw you now, and it's like, wow.
Right, so we were terrible. I mean, and absolutely. So I'm giving you, like, the very, very first when I started and quit. That was, I was 10 years old, but it was when I was 13, and John, I met John.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that. So 3 years later, right, I mean, I think that was all about, you know, friends. Somebody had an electric guitar, right. One of our friends, and I'm like, oh, I used to do this. And now that it became electrified and it was plugging in and he was picking out songs by ears, I was like, I got to do this too, right? So that was how it became for me. Paper route, going to get a guitar, and then plucking out Def Leppard songs. We put a band together. We didn't let our lack of talent stop us from saying, let's
Def
put a Leopard band together.
Def Leppard are not easy things to start out with.
Right, right. No, I mean, and that's when we shifted to things like the Ramones and the Sex Pistols.
The Paper Route.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I was always, what I used to do, though, I had this plan, like, for collecting.
Yeah.
I would look and, like, look at the weather, and I would, like, try to pick the day it was pouring and go looking like a wet sore rat, like, collecting.
Oh, yes. You went
they would always
sympathy.
Give me an extra
You went for the sympathy. Oh, my God, yes. Paper route is a thing. Does that still exist for kids today?
I don't know. We'd have, like, the one dude. I actually had one guy come to my house. This is, like, a couple years later. And, you know, they had some people just paid direct.
Yeah.
It turned out some guy was stealing and not paying.
Oh,
and they owed me money.
I remember hearing about people getting arrested for that. Grown men.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was a grown... I remember the house he lived in and everything.
I think there's more of a thing now, because I had a job like this when I lived in San Diego. I did, like, nighttime, overnight, picking up papers from the distribution place and then going to a specified area and, you know, throwing them on the doorsteps or something. I mean, there might be that now. I don't know how much real individual paperboy stuff.
I don't. I mean, you know, now you
paper person, paper person.
We imagine it or we don't. There's a lot more weirdos out there.
All right.
You know, people are gonna freak about, like, going to people's doors and stuff.
So you want to hear a funny one about how I got started? I was watching. This is the truth. I was watching the Mickey Mouse Club.
Uh huh.
And that one guy, Cubby, I guess he played drums. He had a drum solo. And that was it. I was like, wow, I want to do that. I can do that. And, yeah, and that was weird, man. And then I just, like, started with the lessons and all that stuff. And then I got into playing with my other friend that we had on the show, Rich, and organ and drums and just doing standards and other stuff and took it up from there.
And, you know, the thing is that you can't plan on or you can't it is what kind of lucky chance, you know, came your way. I was just right. having a conversation with some college friends of mine on Friday night. We went to a Sabres game, and my buddy Jim was telling me that his very first concert was Kiss when he was a little kid.
Wow.
And it happened to be that his parents wanted to go to the show. They were
right.
Kiss fans, but they were like, we can't leave the kids at home, so... You know, they took him, and he and his brother saw Kiss, and he's like, life was never...
stood there like, oh.
Yeah, he's like, I remember the performance. It just blew me away, and it just, from then on.
Yeah.
So you have, you know, imagine the kid who's like, oh, I'm not taking you, stay home. You know, he doesn't get that experience.
Right.
See, I remember, that's what I remember was the, it was 1983. It was their 10-year anniversary, Creatures of the Night Tour.
Mm-hmm.
They were lying that Ace hurt his hand when he quit.
Yeah.
But it was Vincent, and they canceled the tour because it wasn't doing well enough. They have the War Memorial.
Uh-huh.
And it was Paul's birthday. Gene brought out a cake and made like he was going to throw in the crowd. But I was blown away because they were still doing all the pyrotechnics, and you know who opened for him? Night Ranger.
Wow.
Oh, really? Wow, there's a different bill.
I know. Well, you didn't know probably at that time what Night Ranger was going to go on
to
become.
No, that's the thing. And like one of the things with me is like I was like John actually again where I played bass, and I sucked. But like a couple things that I have this songbook, I could do Rock You Like a Hurricane and the Trooper a little, because for those guys, it's fairly straightforward.
Yeah.
It's just play fast, sort of change chord, play fast. But I think also that's why I became more on this side of the music stuff, was because I didn't have the passion for it too, where I had interest in like 100 different things. And I just couldn't focus on one. And I had another case, too, where I can look back now and smile because we're still really good friends. I had, like, the one legit guy in high school, my friend Rob Mount, who's played with Lou Gramm, who's played at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, who does the Fantasy Camp.
Yeah.
Played with all these guys, and it's cool. It's like, can you imagine, like, you're talking to friends, like, listening to Foreigner, then, like, one of your really good friends is playing with Lou Gramm?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We're actually very lucky, too, around here. We have a lot of guys that are still in the area. You just don't know, you know, who they've played with, you know. It's great. From Gates, Michael Stertout, right? I mean, all these guys, you know, A.D. Zimmer, they've played with Lou. It just... They're around here. It's very cool, man. We're very rich.
And I still remember, like, we called our first band Feedback because our equipment sucked. So, funny story.
Oh, I remember that.
I finally go, and I can't, you know, I just can't do this. I'm just, I'm not trying. I just don't have enough interest. So I take my amp. Sucks, this little amp. I, like, take it to a music store by Dewey Ladd, I think. So it's like, maybe I'll get, like, $5 for it. This guy comes out. He looks like David Lee Roth. He takes it. He goes in back. I hear him, like, all the feedback. He comes out. I'm like, he's probably just going to say, I'll take it. I'll give you $75. I want to run up the door.
Give it to me. Yeah. You probably traded in something vintage that was worth thousands.
He's probably laughing at me now. He's probably laughing at me going, it's like $2,000 or something. I'm actually getting into gear now. We talked about, like, Geddy Lee's Big Beautiful Book of Bass.
And I have that book.
Jimmy Page's coffee table book.
Yeah. And Jimmy Page, I just read, says he's going to do some sort of... You know, tell all biography, autobiography, whatever, but it won't be published until after he dies, so that he can just be honest and say it all.
Well, they were like some good Christian boys in Zeppelin, though.
Right, he's got some stories to tell. He doesn't want to deal with.
You ever think of the mix about that, though, too? Where, like, you're doing these books with these, you know, some of the stuff you did, but you have, like, people who are actually your friends.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I don't think we know half the stories, just what's been published.
From being around musicians? Probably not.
Yes, right.
And I know, like, Robert Plant, like, he wouldn't even want to talk about it, but he would just try to say, you know, I'm not really, you know, it's like the first couple of years or whatever.
Was he 21?
He was 1948. He was like 19, like 18, like 1920. He's born in 1948.
Could you imagine having that much fame at that age?
That is like the one question I would love to ask him. Robert, if you're out there and you know you want to be on the show, everybody does. I would have loved to ask him, okay, they got from the Midlands, they got Bonzo and him, and you got these, it's hard to say seasoned musicians, because like Page and Jones, they were under 25, but they had played like on 500 different things in these London.
Well, the session scene was big then. England was different then. London was, you know, it was a different scene.
Right? They had jobs at studios.
Yeah, and that's where Plant met a couple of those guys. And then you had all that 50s stuff that was going on, the swing stuff, which is where Plant and Bonham sort of came in from.
And you always hear it, too. You can't read a book. I just started to read Steve Marriott's book. It was all skiffle with Lonnie Donegan.
Yeah,
You cannot hear any of these bands, Beatles, any band, it's going to be skiffle.
And there are some interviews of a young Jimmy Page looking like he's 16.
I see, and you can look it up, him singing when he was like 15.
Yeah, talking about how he loves playing skiffle, and
Oh, did you see him on This Will Get Loud? When he's like, when they put Link around, he's like, he's playing along.
Yes. I mean, he is mesmerizing for me because, I mean, he is, after I picked up the guitar, right? So once you start to get into stuff and learning things, and I had to sort of backtrack. I was born in 1970. So by 1980, you know, Bonham died and there was no more Zeppelin. The stuff that I was listening to had come out like 10, 12 years before. It wasn't like the cool hip stuff anymore.
I could still remember with our old Times Union, it was they put the little like blurbs on the side that said Led Zeppelin drummer dies.
Yeah.
And then a little later, Led Zeppelin disbands.
Exactly. Yep. But yeah, absolutely. And then you start to learn how to play their music. You're like, how cool, how creative they did this. And it's more than one guitar line. And he wasn't just about...
I got a quick question. So when you're listening to that stuff, because I don't know, when you know how he detunes and plays in weird keys. So how do you figure that out when you can't understand what's going on?
Well, the difference...
Is there a way to figure that out in your head? Or you just go, I don't know. Or you stumble on it? Or
after a while, you can hear certain things.
Okay.
Like, so my ear will now pick up that, oh, they're down a half step.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds, or if a guitar is in drop D, for example, and they hit that chord, I'm like, they're in drop D. And so you know that. But back then, trial and error, and it was more error than anything else, right? Yeah. Well, today, you fired up on YouTube, and somebody's telling you within seconds. What a night and day difference.
You would
do
like freak. I remember being at a show at the auditorium, and there's a song playing. It's my friend. I can't figure it. It's like a jazz. Takes the phone, puts it up.
Yep.
Phone tells them exactly what song it is.
Shazam,
it is and everything.
Shazam. I love that app. It's exactly what happens. I hear a song. I'm like, I dig it. What is it? Got to hear what it is.
Oh, wow. But there's especially if you're a musician, Keith Richards' bio and what he does, he really starts going in about like the chords and playing. But he said, you know, Muddy Waters, some stuff he couldn't figure out how to play. You know, and he asked Muddy, and Muddy sort of chuckles at him. He goes like, okay, forget this line, do this. And Robert Johnson used to go, like, play with his back to the stage so people wouldn't see how he was doing it.
Huh. There's so many things. I mean, once you get into, like, the blues guitar players, yeah, they were open tunings to play slide, all sorts of stuff that makes it harder for you. Like, when you're early on in your guitar playing,
right.
You're like, what are they doing? And it's hard to tell. But then later on, it takes some people telling you, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. You know, it takes some people... your teachers or other guitar players, other musicians, you know, I'm of the ilk that, you know, musicians, this isn't a competition. It's
right.
A collaboration, man. There's no musician I've ever met that I didn't learn something from, you know, and so I'm never competing. And it's cool. That's some of the stuff I know is because someone took the time to tell me.
I also think that I've always heard, like, in terms of writing, because I write a lot more than I do music, is sometimes you start off a little, like, copycatting us.
Yeah,
so you find your own. So when you're playing, you find your own voice eventually after playing all your... Which leads, again, before I forget, your Tesla story.
absolutely. I mean, you're talking about right before we went on air. Yeah. I was in January.
We always have the best shows before we go on air.
Yeah.
We need to have a secret mic up.
Right. I was in Florida in January and had the very good... I was there with some college friends and had the very good fortune that... Tesla was playing at Coconut Creek, Florida, and one of my buddy's actual brother had been a roadie for them back in the 90s and was still friendly with Jeff Keith, their lead singer. So a couple of requests, and next thing you know, Jeff Keith is letting him know that there would be 4 VIP passes. So I got to see the show and then meet Jeff, and luckily enough, also Frank Hannon came out. And Frank in particular, their song, Love Song, I forget what record it was, that it was on of theirs, but it's a normal ballady song, but his solo to me was fantastic. And in 1990, 1991, whenever it was, I'm sitting there saying, this is the first solo I'm going to learn note for note and working on the bends and making sure I'm not screwing anything up. And it really taught me, for the first time, about crafting, you know, not just playing whatever licks you can just spit out, but crafting a solo. I told him that, and I told him what it meant to me, and he was really receptive, cool dude. My friends were taking pictures of the whole thing, and there's a point where he's, like, even giving me a hug, and it looks like I'm taking a big sniff of his hair. I'm like...
totally, like, you'd be an internet sensation now.
I'm like, dude,
you're
so cool. I mean, thank God, I would go viral, probably, if he put that on...
you'd be wait a second, that's Dan on the meme here.
Yeah, you ever seen those, like, memes of, like, it looks like President Joe Biden, like, kissing somebody's hair or whatever? That's what it looked like to me,
I had the wand.
Who does your hair?
I had the wand with doing carpet cleaning, and the hose got me in the... Do I have to spell it out for you? And I'm just... We're just saying, if there's a camera in here, start looking, Googling YouTube.
Well, that really sucks.
Like, can you imagine... dude, for this show. Can you imagine all of a sudden you just start walking, and all people are just going by and going...
Yeah. Oh, my God, yes.
Johnny, get away from that man.
So it was like he was really cool and he appreciated it, right?
Right. Yeah, no, that's hilarious.
Well, there's a story about Ritchie Blackmore and, you know, Ronnie James Dio's best friend. I always wonder if Rainbow in the Dark was written about him.
And
I remember, like, Ian Gillan, I read his book, and he said Ritchie comes to his house one day and asks him if he wants to join Rainbow. And I guess his girlfriend's back by the fence. He's like, Ritchie, why's your girlfriend back by the fence? I thought you were going to hit me. But I guess, like, there were stories about encounters with him where he hates the, oh, you're great. But if you start talking guitar, but I guess I think it was Greg Goldie from Jafria. They're on tour with them.
Player.
They're on tour, and I guess there was something that no guitar solo. You couldn't do the solos because Richie said you can't do solos. So Greg Goldie, it's the last night of the tour they're on with them. He's like, screw that. I'm going to do it. So he does it. They're leaving. So Richie Blackmore's coming at him. He's like, oh, whatever. Richie Blackmore stops him, and he goes, man, that was great. You show me how you did that. So, see, he's a fan in the end.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think he's an enigmatic. I think he likes to just make people nervous.
Maybe. I've never understood that kind of stuff, but...
Yeah, same.
Like, why do you go out of your way to be difficult?
I don't know. And, like, he would say, I guess, and I realized when I saw Deep Purple, they turned the lights up, and then they turned down, and it never came out. And Ian Gillan said, Richie wouldn't do... We'd have to drag him out, because you had to deserve the encore.
No kidding.
Yeah. And that's the whole Ronnie James Dio thing where he said how cruel Richie... Some fan came from, like, 12 hours away, you know, waited for Richie, and he blew him off. So Dio just said, hey... You're going to play in my band, you're going to be nice to every fan.
Yeah. Well, you know, for some of these guys, at some point it becomes a business, and they're running it like a dictator.
And I think, to imagine every day, I mean, we both have this problem being on the podcast with selfies and stuff, and I get mistaken for Taylor Swift a lot on my birthday.
I can see that.
And
I
you can imagine, okay, you come from working class roots, and if, you know, a lot of people, like musicians, they stay down to earth. It can be huge. But some people, it's just got to go to their head.
Go to their head.
And you imagine everybody coming up to you, oh, you're awesome, you're great.
Well, I think part of that is, what do you want? You know, that it's just a BS thing to get in the door or start the conversation. You know what I mean? Start a conversation and then, like, okay, yeah, well, my friend wants tickets or I want something for free or I don't know. You know, and I think... That's your own paranoia. I mean, just take it as what it were. Somebody says you play good, say thanks, and walk away.
But you want to say you suck?
Well, no, but I'm just saying, some of these guys, I think they set themselves up like there's more to
it
than just
like, my view on autographs, it's your choice if you do it, but pro wrestler Kevin Nash said it the best ever, where he goes, okay, you got somebody asking you for an autograph. You're like, no. They chase you down. They're pestering you. Whereas if they ask you for an autograph, sure, under 30 seconds, sign, go away.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's kind of like, why play hard to get? I mean, that's like not, maybe that's what people think they're doing. So that encourages the pestering
types. But then, I go the other way with my personality where I'm not, you know, I'm very sort of like a introvert if I don't know you. And I've seen friends of mine who are like, not as, they have good careers, people bothering them after their shows and stuff. And I know a few of them are very introverted. Mm-hmm. It's sort of tough, too. But you realize, it's like, okay, if you're in the business, you got to know what, you know, don't complain when you got what you wanted.
Right.
It's never having been famous. I can't say.
Oh, come on. You've been on a radio show on this podcast.
You're right.
And so, but I do have actually a funny little story. I had the good fortune in high school, my band called Grey Haven at the time, and actually I owe a call to my buddy Jeff Yaw, who called me yesterday. He was the other guitar player in that band. But, We had the good fortune of landing with the American Lung Association. They had a program that they were taking out to high schools and middle schools called Pot Shots, trying to convince kids not to smoke cigarettes. It was an anti-cancer program. And they got the idea that if we put up there a teenage band, local band, and instead of making it a lecture, we make it a show that maybe we get through. So we got hired. We got the gig. Right? And the American Lung Association would get a sound man. They would rent U-Haul for the equipment, and we'd go from middle school to middle school to middle school. And they presented it in such a way that I think those kids thought we were somebody famous, right? And we would get asked for autographs after the show. I'm in 10th grade. Me and my buddies have just played, 2 hours of a gig, and they're lining up these 8th, 7th, and 8th graders asking for autographs. And I'm like, do you guys know I'm just a high schooler down the road, right? But it was crazy. It made me think, like, why do people ask for autographs?
I had that experience, and I've never been famous, man. My friend Beth Bailey, she was on the show, she's the Eclipse Committee. sort of helped produce a couple of, did cameos a couple of her movies. We had a premiere of The Dryden. We had the little, somebody asked me for an autograph. And I
that's happened
it,
to me.
Okay, I apologized to whoever it was because I signed it Tony Stark.
That's happened to me, though. I mean, I think it's nice. People think enough of you that they think you're a big enough deal that they want something to remember your performance. I mean, that's what
you know,
it
my
is,
friend
you know?
Buck, you met Buck. He was on our Zoom. What he did was he just moved now. He's in Binghamton. But he would say, you know, there's a cool part about being a musician because, yeah, I'm just playing bars and everything else. But I walk around town and people know me.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to feel really good when you're playing stuff and you see people having a good time as opposed to the people just in the corner, like me, when I'm like...
Sure.
Like this. But then coming up, you say, hey, I dug that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's interesting. I mean, in today's world, there are photographs. I didn't ask Frank Hannon or Jeff Keith for their autographs, right, when I met them. But my buddies were taking photographs, and so I have photographs of the event.
That's
cool. You know, what's interesting, what I did do, and I didn't have to do, is I purposely bought their CD, paid cash for their CD. I don't even have a CD.
You photoshopped yourself into a live, picture.
Yeah, and it came autographed. I mean, that was – and because, you know, like I want to support these guys. I know –
that's cool.
You know, they gave me VIP pass. Right. But today, it's hard to sell your music, so I bought a CD player.
Yeah, buy CDs.
Yeah, and they have their signatures on them. I've even paid $40 for it.
Well, I had the one – like I said, I've met Steve Winwood's daughter, Lily. We had her on a Zoom. Sweetheart. So she comes here. I was a little – because there were, like, some people here just here because it was Steve's daughter. They wanted her to sign Traffic albums and stuff. And I'm like, that's not sort of, you know.
Yeah.
So we're talking afterwards. It's like, you want to do a picture? So what I said to her, I go, you're not going to sell it, are you?
Well, you do look like Taylor Swift. What'd you say, the morning after her birthday bash? I see that, man.
Oh, it was like the running joke for years and years.
So I have to tell you something. Okay, this is a news flash for all the people that are familiar with the show. Now, I've been hearing some Billie Eilish music on some, on some TV shows, and they're very cool songs. So I am slowly warming up to her style. Even though she shouldn't be as big as she is, her songs are good. No, on True Detective, she does a theme song for Night Country. You know, something about, like... Make Me Dead or Wish I Was Dead or something or other. And there was another song that she did in one scene of something that was really, really good. It had a great groove. And I don't know. Anyway, so just
you're
to
gonna,
show you.
You're going
to
come in here dressed as a depressed teenager.
That's right. Well, I'm starting
But one thing
sweater.
I wanted to talk about a little, some memories. And I know you probably use your paper route, Moni. I do too. As kids, listen closely. You could go to concerts for around $10.
Right. Yeah, 15.
Really?
10, 15
seriously?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They were $3, $4 when I was in high school.
My first one, I think, at the War Memorial was Rainbow. It was Ozzy. It was Ozzy on Diary. Just before Randy got killed, like, a couple weeks beforehand. Mm-hmm. It was Ozzy. Then it was Rainbow Ride and Scorpions. They were like $10.95.
I think mine was Iron Butterfly. That shows you how old I am.
What's that? I know my brother saw Led Zeppelin for $3.50.
Yeah, wow. I remember.
I mean, $3.50, right. $3,000.
Yeah.
For me, it was Triumph. And it was $15, and
that's still good.
The Pat Travers Band was.
Yeah, I was there. Boom, boom, out goes
boom,
the lights.
You were there at that show.
I was there.
Thunder 7 tour.
Yep.
Right? It was around $15, wasn't it?
Around
maybe 12, 14, whatever it was.
Once on one tour too, I think. So I think I saw him twice. Like Foghat opened for maybe once. I know I saw Foghat open for somebody. I get the opening bands mixed up a lot. Like I was wondering. I know I saw Tesla on that show.
Yes, I saw Tesla at the War Memorial too.
Opened up for.
They were opening up. Yes, you're right. Who were they opening up for? Is that Malmsteen? See Malmsteen there?
No,
Yngwie.
Yeah.
I would just go, literally, you know, and those were the days, too, obviously, thinking back, laughing, where, you know, my mom would go pick the tickets up. But I remember going to see Saxon at the Penny Arcade, and the funny part was, okay, you're like, your kids, you want to, I got my Black Sabbath shirt, I'm looking cool with all of it. You know, and then I've always said, like, you cannot look cool eating an ice cream after. But, like, me and my friends are all, we bad. Then we see all the guys, there's our mom to pick us up over here.
There goes that fantasy. see, right?
Penny Arcade, what a place. Too bad there isn't a place like that still these days up there.
I got lucky enough to play there a bunch of times, and I got some tapes.
Motorhead there. I saw Marillion there.
Wow. Marillion's cool.
But the funny part, so I had a friend in high school, Phil Snow, where he lived by there. And Marillion.
Yeah, Marillion is cool. You'll have to talk to Simon about Marillion.
Oh, yeah.
He's a big fan.
Good old Fish, too.
Marillion was here. They played at Anthology.
See, they played at... Who was their singer? I know Fish quit. It didn't come back.
This was their second, their recent guy, who's been with the band a long time now. I can't think of his name. The current Marillion singer. Oh, my God, Simon.
That's our biggest thing where, like, we always say, look it up. We're not, like, a pro show.
Yeah, we don't have no producer. Where's your producer? Well, all the info.
right. So, like, yeah,
just
Simon
keep talking
is
and
cool.
Then quit after a while.
Right.
But I saw Loudness and Keel there.
Yep.
But the thing was, so my friend Phil Snover is trying to, like, play it all up. Always, like, I always say the myth of the bad club because, okay, if you have some place you're getting into fight, it's going to close. But he's like, oh, yeah, it's dangerous. So we're all freaking out. You go in there, nothing. Only thing that came close the one time, I got pushed into the sky. Imagine ZZ Top roadie, about 500 pounds. And I turn around and I'm like, he's like, don't push, man. But scary one, my friend Mike Sheldon, who's been on here, our Gothic Toad bassist, he saw Slayer. Mm-hmm. He said there are all these people, like, with the hoods.
Right. And druids.
That's a different crowd, yeah.
Yeah, I know Jeff Bauman said, he said the best concert he ever saw was Slayer's Farewell Tour.
Slayer, I'm no doubt. I have no doubt about that.
No, it's Gwen Stefani.
What's your thoughts on Gwen?
Oh, I like, it's like Raggeds, but I just... Any cheap joke we can make on this show.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I would go every – I didn't care who the band was, but I remember laughing because, like, we'd go see some of these, like, Iron Maiden and all that get shoved around. Then we'd go see Ford and just walk right up front.
Right.
That's right. It was indiscriminate. I mean, I liked it all. Foreigner, I've never seen. I never did see Foreigner, though.
Chris de Burgh opened up for Asia. I can't remember who opened for. I saw Foreigner once. It was on Agent Provocateur tour.
You know, I picked up that Live at the Rainbow. It's like a late 70s live thing. Boy, is that good. Because it's pretty much just the first album, and they do Double Vision, the song. Other than that, it's pretty much a straight-up rock, and boy, are they...
Yeah.
They were really good because that was the original concept of the band.
Big fan. Foreigner is in the. I mean, I think anybody who grew up here, I would hope, has Foreigner in the soundtrack of their life.
I'm also laughing because we used to have the Bible thumpers at some of those shows.
Yeah.
So a guy hands me a thing when I'm walking out, and he was a Foreigner. Hey, good marketing. But I use this thing. Okay, I don't equate. Some popular sucks. Some not popular sucks. I always say, take a song, say like. Hot Blooded, Double Vision. Mm-hmm. Pretend some cool band did it, and people who don't like it would love it.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's true.
I remember Agent Provocateur. That was massive.
I have a source for this. You know which album was Lou's favorite? This will shock you if you want to take a guess or not. Just pick one, Greg, okay?
Foreigner,
Mr. Moonlight.
Oh, yeah? Really?
He loved that album.
Oh, that was the one with Bruce Turgeon and...
Yeah.
And who else was on that? That was different.
But that one, I don't think a lot of people would realize that would be the one.
Huh, me either. I thought Four, because I read his book. I mean, he said Foreigner 4 was where they kind of made their comeback. Now, mine was Head Games, and they said that was, like, the worst... experience in the worst album, but I really like that album.
Well, it's like Monty Python, where like it was a miserable experience making Holy Grail.
Yeah,
the product. Yeah, but the product that comes out of something like that, I'm sure for them it's personal. They remember how miserable the experience.
Well, they said the production, this producer didn't have a lot of time, and he was partying or I don't know, but there was like the drums were a little distorted. But I kind of like that. It has a real nasty kind of sound, like a I don't know. It had that sound like he did the Cars, Roy Thomas Baker, I guess it was. Yep. And you know, I don't know, I like his production. It's different, you know?
I pick weird things out, though, like from Lou's bio, I read it. I realized the one place that I missed was the Orange Monkey.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, man, I used to play there all the time.
Because I remember Casablanca and all these, but then I'm hearing from everybody about the Orange Monkey.
Who was the guy that ran that? It was a Greek guy. No free Coke. No free Coke. That was like that. Pepsi, just Pepsi. And it was like, I forgot his name now. His brother was a bartender, and he was like the guy that ran the place. I don't think he knew anything about bands. He just figured that would make money and there'd be girls there.
Actually cracked me up because, you know, we like to bring what we think we know. Like, I've had friends swear, like, Suffragette City must be about Rochester because of Bowie's thing, and I think this happened afterwards. But I remember with the whole No Coke Pepsi Saturday Night Live thing, you know, everybody's going to me, that's about Tahoe's. And I'm going, well, it might be, but, you know, you go to Chicago and there's one of those places every corner.
Everywhere. And then think about it, later on, there was Seinfeld and then No Soup for You. Kind of concept is,
You know, but that's what we do. We try to, like that.
Well, they're like markers. They're like landmarks in our experiences, I guess.
Yeah.
But could you, like, imagine, like, when we started then, and I've always said one of my gateway things is sort of the change from, like, sort of maybe maturing was that Van Halen concert at Silver Stadium. I think everybody was there. The Van Hager concert.
I was there. You're right. It feels like everyone in Rochester says they were there. I for real was there. 51-52, right?
You know, one of the biggest
things. I was at the U2 one. It was in October, and it was cold as hell.
Rockford Turner Overdrive opened.
Kim Mitchell.
And Bachman Turner Overdrive, right?
Wow. Yeah, those are the two bands that open. And then I remember, like, you know, Sammy always going to tell the story. Well, I took Michael for a garbage plate. And I remember, I think you said you were at that show where Kevin said it. The one
nobody
where
wanted
Sammy
to stay in his
for,
room.
Like, 3 hours at the War Memorial.
Yeah. Through up in the rafters.
He went up to the rafters.
Performer, man, yeah. Yeah. Do you guys know that his family has ties to here?
Yeah, mob ties.
He lived in Pompeii.
Mob ties to here.
To Sammy?
Yeah.
Well, that's not surprising. They ran the music business for a lot of years.
So you could, I'm sure at this point it's viewable anywhere on
I watched
website.
It. Yeah, I watched
the Dr. Louis Gates, Finding Your Roots, man. It's crazy.
He used to live in Penfield, I think.
Was it Penfield?
No, he lived. All I remember from his book, and his book's really, you know, and the part you have to laugh at is he talks about Rochester when he plays here. He's like, man, when I couldn't wait to get out of here. And the reason was he didn't hate it. He was a California boy. He was freezing his butt off.
Yeah.
I don't know. I know he lived like his wife's dad got him a job driving a garbage truck. Mm-hmm. I think, I'm going to say he lived down by Charlotte because he mentioned it a lot.
Could be. I don't know.
Would you think there would be like the, like apartment Sammy rented or a house now or something like.
Could be.
I do remember the detail that didn't want his uncle, somebody owned a fruit stand on Monroe Avenue.
Yeah.
Right? That was the mob potential there. Like somebody,
Actually, I should put together a show like about that, about all the mob stuff. I remember
I listened to some shows, Tommy James and the Shondells. They got their deal through the mob. And they were, like, in Vegas or wherever it was. And there were a couple other bands that, I mean, you know,
Sinatra, though. He was, like, this honest boy.
Yeah, right. I'm sure Paul Anka and all those guys.
My one experience with the mob, though, was I went out to dinner. And I found all these guys were mobsters. And they get the bill comes. And they give it to me. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? Like, hey, kid, we're crime. Crime don't pay.
So what'd you do?
You
paid it?
My good jokes.
Crime don't pay.
No, we had the funniest, this is true, my really good friend Rob, we had a stag party at a place. There was a mob party down there. They started coming in, and what they would do was, like, we had, like, the gifts for the stag thing. Somebody got, like, a TV for $250. One of the guys comes up to him, hey, I'm going to give you $600 for that TV.
That's how it works?
You know, you were like, yeah. Those were good times growing up, though. It's like weird. I think I don't like to do nostalgia a lot. I think it's toxic in some ways if you think these were ideal. But for us, we had our fun.
Yeah. The thing, going back for a minute, the thing with the Orange Monkey, because what I remember is if you played harder rock, it was that in the arcade. Every place else wanted Top 40.
Mm-hmm.
And those were the two big places if you wanted to put on a concert-y type thing. And play harder rock, classic rock now. I mean, that was the place.
Memory, too. Like, I'll remember. I have no idea who these bands were, but, like, Monarch, Gamelon, Icewater Mansion.
I remember Gamelon.
The Little Trolls.
Yeah.
The Little Trolls.
I played there with
aren't they from Batavia?
I just remember, I always picture these guys like at farmers' bins, like Kansas.
I did a thing there with Ram that was a sequel to Black Sheep after Donnie Mancuso went off and formed other stuff, and he got me involved. And then I played with them. We played Monkey a few times. Lee Brovitz, I don't know if you know him. He was a bass player. And, yeah, he was a crazy guy. That was fun.
Yeah, let's zoom ahead now on your career. How did you come to play, like, sort of like, as you do now, like...
Yeah, I'm a lawyer during the day.
Well, people don't run out of your thing like they would do like Ross.
Right. So I'm a lawyer during the day, but, you know, I've been a musician in and around, you know, in and out of bands, sometimes on, sometimes off kind of thing, for 40 years. Can you believe it? I
mean, public service method. So we'll talk a little about, like, you do disability law.
Zaya Proko,
right? Zaya
Proko.
Oh, my goodness. I mentioned a firm, right?
Yeah.
But for disability law, nobody can get us for, like, mental stress and misery from listening to the show, can they?
Have you been hurt or injured in an accident?
Well, I listened to these guys and was like...
You are probably a soothing a balm for them, I'm sure. I'm sure it's something that they're into, and you take them in cool, creative, different ways, man, like we are today.
Yeah.
I'm an attorney. We do workers' comp and Social Security, Zaya Proko.
What would be, like, a misconception about that to, like, the average person? If you mentioned you did that.
Easy big bucks?
It's not easy big bucks, no. I think the misconception, I think, on the Social Security side is that most folks think... I've been paying taxes into the system, and it's sort of like an application and an automatic. Right. Here you go. It's not that.
That's a
misconception. I also think there's a misconception on the workers' comp side where folks think they're in the middle of a big bad lawsuit with their employer. It is a legal claim, but it isn't the Supreme Court case that some people make it out to be in their heads. So, yeah. Those are the two big
misconceptions. There was one, I can't remember the whole thing, but my dad would get, there was some lawsuit. He was part of, like, a class action.
Oh, so we were finally part of it, yeah.
Finally, I got a judgment. I think he got, like, $7.
No, the only people who make money in the class action lawsuits are the attorneys. Verizon Wireless, here's your $50 coupon or something.
Right.
Not too long ago that I got, I didn't even know I was part of it. But, yeah. And then at nighttime I play guitar, man. That's what I do. I'm in two bands now, Dangerously Twisted, which is
That band. I saw those videos.
Thank you very much. Yep. I appreciate that, Greg. We are a I wouldn't call it a tribute band, but it's certainly Allman Brothers, Government and Mule infused.
Well, I know friends
throughout the whole thing. So it's supposed to have that kind of a vibe. And then I also play in a trio, the front, which it was Andy. We were talking about Billy Ruoff was in that for a number of years, for about a year or so. He hasn't been in it, and we've been going on as a trio. We still jam.
You try to do. There's always, I love a meme where it's like a Trojan horse, and it says cover songs, and then inside your music.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. But yeah, we do covers. We also write our own stuff. So we're happy to. We love getting into that creative part, but, you know, we also recognize that it's not going to sell 100,000. It's not going to get any downloads.
No, that's the best, because I had, and this wasn't really a friend, this is actually a person, a pretty bad person I used to know in high school, but he thought he started playing guitar, he was automatically a rock star. Mm-hmm. He's going on about, and he stunk, which he did, but he's going on about, I'm going to be, you know, maybe within a year, I don't mind going on the road for a year, and I'm going to be huge. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you just get, you know, my brother is in a band, New Math here and everything. Mm-hmm. I know the workings of it. I don't know if it gets so much in your head. Yeah, we all dream. We get that thing from the publisher's clearinghouse. We're spending money. Right. I don't know if you just get so deluded or whatever.
You know, what's cool about it is if it's in you and you work at it, we started, and I know we're going in so many different directions, but we were talking before about the amount of time that you devote to something before you get good at it. I read... a long time ago, I forget the name of the book, that 10,000 hours, you need to devote 10,000 hours to something truly devoted, whether it's a sport that you want to try to make it to the big leagues. I mean, 10,000 hours is a lot of time to devote to something in particular before you get that expert level, and then maybe maybe you have a shot to go to get up to that level.
I was somewhat naive back in the day because I would do like a year and a half with somebody with a banner. Well, nothing's happening. I'm out.
Yeah,
you know, no. I'd expect it to be like a year or two. You know, something should be happening by now, and then see you.
Right. So right.
I learned that lesson fast that you got to stick with something because you know what? Somebody actually told me once, and I won't name who, but a well respected guy at the Whirlwind Company. Who said to me that I was getting a reputation as a band hopper.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of set me straight. And I realized, okay, I got to commit to something and, you know, and kind of stick with it. And I think that's an important thing to know.
Yeah, and you devote the time, and then eventually I think it pays you back much more than you ever thought that it would. Like, so I'm grateful today. I mean, and again, I imagine I get to do everything that I want to do when it comes to my guitar playing. If I want to write some songs, you know, or lay down a track on my friend Billy's song that he did here with Andy Chappelle, like, I'm happy to do that. That's just as exciting for me as doing a gig at the Bug Jar for 30 minutes in between two other bands or doing three-hour-long cover songs, you know, at a B-side. That's quite a great gig.
Yeah, that's that is a fun place.
And it's just, to me, all of it is entertaining, but I don't have any management forcing me to do one more thing, right? It's not the job.
B-side's a great place, too. They take care of their bands, and I always get take out there, like, everything. It's always in this parking. Pretty much now it's getting a little crowded.
I have to laugh. I was running late the other night that you came.
Yep.
So I'm rushing my stuff in there, right? And the one guy that works there, he's a tall blonde. Yeah, he's one of the waiters. And bless his heart, though, he comes up to me. I'm like frantic, right?
I bet I know the guy too because he recognizes me every time I go in.
I'm frantically, you know, I'm rushing around, getting all nervous because we only ended up being 10 minutes late, so that wasn't. But. And he comes up to me and goes, do you know what you want to eat for later? I'm like, well, what? I'm thinking, now? Really?
Take care of it, yeah.
But he, taking you know, care of you. But yeah, and I gave those guys both, you know, the bartender and him, money, you know, because I thought, and I even gave the sound guy some money, because they just do a good job for you. And it's a very friendly atmosphere, and you get the same people that show up, and you know, it's very gratifying, because when you're done playing, everybody leaves.
Yeah.
There's no reason to stick around when there's no music.
Right.
So that, to me, is great.
It's a destination, the place for the music.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's cool. But I really think that's the attitude. You can go in this. You can be a very professional musician. You got to just start out going. It's got to be for the fun.
Yeah.
You know, you got to enjoy. Don't take yourself so seriously or whatever. You know, once that's... Because you could tell watching. I mean, I've seen some really great... They were cover bands, and I have no problem with cover bands, but I've seen, like, these musicians who... You know, they're good, but they're just going through the motions.
Mm-hmm.
Then I see you could tell when people just have, like, a passion for it.
Yeah. And, right. Well, I mean, if I just saw, we don't have, you said you started to be a bass player. I just happened to see a video on Instagram of the bassists union meeting. And the dude is like, major topic of the day is, why do you guys all look so bored? And he's like... Puts up a picture of John Entwistle. He goes, does he even know he's in the Who?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Pete Townshend's smart thing about the band gets along horribly. The singers are separate from his geezer. If everything's not going great, he's unhappy. Now, the drummer is someone I've never seen.
Yeah.
Now, the bass player, he's not interested in anything.
He's definitely, like, always looks like he'd rather be playing golf.
What about, like, Bill Wyman or something, too? He's just...
Yeah. Speaking of that, though, Simon Mazik there does videos, right?
Yes, yeah.
You introduced me to him. So he just sent me another one with you on bass.
Uh-huh.
So now I got to watch that one.
Yes, yeah. That's when I was playing with Flesh Band Powell, probably he sent you some video. There's lots of video of that. I was in that band for about 9 years or so, yeah.
I could just picture, I'm picturing the scene from Animal House where they go to the snob fraternity.
Hi, Simon.
Kano come in, and they're like, they send him out, Juglis Muhammad. It's like, they bring you in, they bring somebody in, I'll play this now. He's a bass.
Yeah. The bass is I love the instrument, I'll be honest with you. I'm a guitar player first, and bass player almost by necessity it was, you know. But once you started to just forget trying to treat it as a four-string guitar and treat it as the instrument on its own that it is,
right.
quite a great instrument.
But I've played with some great bass players.
But I saw the picture, too, recently online where it's like lessons for musicians and drummers.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, you know, I'm pretty used to that.
What can we catch you playing out coming up, you know?
Well, I don't currently have anything in the books, but we are Dangerously Twisted is booking now, so I'll be able to tell
anybody out there.
Something soon, yeah.
Want to play at Smoking Joe's?
I can get
you in there.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, let's talk right immediately after this, man.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, wait, any referrals, get that checkbook out to me.
Yeah, well.
But we can't.
You'll get 10% of whatever we get, brother.
Oh, so I get a chicken wing.
You'll get one of them.
Smoking Joe's is an awesome place to play.
Oh, I know it is.
Very cool. But we have to... The elephant in the room. I'm not talking about myself. The eclipse.
Oh, yeah.
Thoughts, anything you care?
Excited, man. This is so cool to be living through this. I lived through one of these before. I was very fortunate. When I was 21 years old, I was in Mexico, in Guadalajara, for a few weeks at a program at a university there. And during the time I was there, they had a complete total, just what we're having now.
Wow.
Complete... dark for about four and a half minutes. It is a super cool experience.
Crime went up 80%.
My view. There's going to be somebody who doesn't know. He'll be walking around Rochester. He'll just, it's Rochester weather.
What's going on?
Yeah. But I remember, I was down there, but Guadalajara wouldn't do it. I would never go back to my old school.
You know, they're lining up at the border for that 20 minutes, right? They're gonna run through.
That would be one, like trying to play Steely Dan. I couldn't imagine.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to be doing a gig at House of Guitars with Mason Tyler, his band, Last Exit.
Is that record store?
Will you be on stage at the time of the eclipse?
No. We're going to do a set, take a break, get blinded by the light, and then go back.
We've said this on the Eclipse show.
By the dark.
I hope at least people who listen to this know a little. Don't stare at the thing.
You can't. I just saw, if you aren't warned enough... So those glasses, assuming they're the right glasses, they'll protect you, right?
Oh, great.
But
if
you actually have those glasses on and you think you're protected and you're looking through a telescope, it won't work. They showed the way that will just burn through the glass itself. So it's the telescope that's got to be protected.
There was like a librarian I was talking to about this, and I think I might do what she said she's going to do. I think it'd be a lot cooler to look at the ground.
That's another way to do it. Yeah, I'll tell you right now. When I saw it in Mexico, and I tell anybody this: don't discount what's happening on your TV. Get a TV screen, put it out somewhere. Those are awesome video.
I remember when I was a kid. That's where I watched it on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
But wouldn't it be great if the moon had like this good sense of humor? Goes, fool you! Where is it? I don't see it. I don't see it.
I'm just laughing at those things on the highway with New York State. You know, their little Nazi-isms there. You know, click at our ticket and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, don't look at the. You know, really, while you're driving, you're going to look up and what do you? You think people are that stupid? I mean, maybe they are. I don't know.
When I tell people about that, I did doors at bars. If you, however stupid you think some people are. Do about 50% more.
You're overestimating.
I guess.
Yes, right. You're...
Oh, as a lawyer, you know. Do not iron while wearing. What?
Every do not do this, every warning. That was some lawsuit that came behind that, man, for sure.
But, Dan, this has been fun.
Oh, it's been great, guys.
Will you come back sometime?
Anytime you guys want me to come back.
He's saying this because he's like... Let me get out of here.
We were talking about coming up with a band name, something solar related. Get this term. I just learned this term. There is such a thing as a solar mass emission, I think is what it is.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so the solar emissions or something like that would be a cool band name for a solar eclipse theme. Something.
Yeah. I would call it either Better an Eclipse than Apocalypse.
Better than yes, better than.
I love the how like all the doomsayers, like all the Y2K people, are all this is going to be something more.
It's the end of the world, end of times, man. Earthquake the other day in New Jersey.
So is it going to be half light or half dark or just fully dark?
It'll be fully dark.
Okay,
but it won't. But it'll be like dusk. It won't be like 3 a.m. dark.
Oh, okay.
A friend actually asked me that, and I was saying no, it's not going to be like blackout midnight.
Yeah. And what I remember, cool things happening. So, like, street lights that are on timers or are sensing the darkness will come on.
Oh, and the other part, watch when it starts the animal reaction. Because
animals, are thinking it's sunsetting, dusk, and all that stuff, and whatever behaviors, you know, are unusual at 3 p.m. For them.
I think werewolves will be freaking out because they'll start turning and it'll stop. But watch out for vampires.
The path of it as it's happening is really also a cool thing, just to see the different shapes and that they talk about it. You know, and I remember it, and so it's kind of interesting to me, although I don't have the full amount of knowledge to be able to say I'm geeking out on it, but watching what they're calling the corona is going to be the coolest thing, because this is what blows my mind.
You can watch that in a bottle, dude.
Pound it, right? Yeah, a little salt and a little lime in it. But this is what blows my mind. This kind of stuff is that, you know, as we understand it, we have really four matters, right? We have gases, liquids, solids. But then there's this fourth one called plasma that we don't really see here on Earth. But that's what the corona is actually made up of. So for a couple of minutes, we'll get the opportunity to see a thing in a state of matter that
like
we don't get to
see. Viscousy thing.
I used to be like an amateur astronomer. I love all this stuff.
Wow.
It's too bad I'm going to bite it before we achieve space travel. But you can't win them all. Maybe not.
Jeff Bezos is working hard on that for you, man. Just order
I actually read the book on Musk because I like to make my own mind up.
Yeah.
But just fascinating about the space travel stuff. Yeah. But very cool. Now, we'll look for these guys. Greg's everywhere.
Yeah. Everywhere.
But we have a very cool thing now. We're going to stop. And then maybe we'll think of a name for the song if you want to call it. But Dan's going to play a little for us. And Greg is, I guess.
I'm going to bang on a keyboard.
So that's different. Once every eclipse.
That's right. You can get some good drum sounds on a keyboard.
But thanks a lot for being on.
My pleasure.
I hope this eclipse keeps expectations in. Let's roll.
It has eclipsed my expectations. That's a great way to sign off. Or whatever.
We always have a problem signing off, so sign off, listen to him play. Bye.
Sunny. Boom, boom.